when I discussed with Ephraim, asked me to speak at this event, I said that I would be happy to do it, honored and happy to speak. And it occurred to me right away what I wanted to say. I want to talk about the relationship that Kiwi had with me, specifically the gifts that Kiwi gave to me, and many areas, of which I'll mention a few, and especially the learning and the Bren and the desire for learning that he clearly had and imparted to me, and what he did to aid and greatly aid in my development. So I'll talk about a few things that happened over the years and describe our relationship a little, and then as some evidence of Kiwi's, what he gave and what he still continues to give, I would like to learn with the group the first Tosfos, Masechta Pesachim. I'm working on Pesachim now. So suffice it to say, when I first met Kiwi, I was not holding by learning a Tosfos. When I first came to this house, it was around 1990, so come out 25 years ago. And Kiwi was 14 or so, 14 or 15. It was after the first round, and when I met him, he had difficulty turning his neck. He would kind of turn from the shoulders. But that's all I saw. And I didn't know about the first round or anything. Never heard a word from him. And I observed that he had, you know, difficulty turning. But that's all I saw of anything. I didn't want to ask. And it was never, you know, so he was 14 or 15. At that time, I was around 30 years of age. Just a little under 30. So I was approximately twice his age. But from the very first times that we met, I have only memories of Kiwi speaking like a peer. I felt like he was a peer. He was had a certain wisdom and a certain way of connecting with people, as you all know. And I just speak for myself. He had a certain way of connecting and being open. And I don't know what Eitzik he was giving at age 14, but some. And just a certain presence and a certain I don't know, just a certain way about him. And I'll come to the learning. Before that, I will say that from all the years, I felt like an part of the family, and specifically like a brother, an older brother to Kiwi. But again, I mean, chronologically, I was much older than he. But somehow we had this parity, and I think even with many people, he had this ability to communicate. And so some of the following I said one time recently, and Mrs. E has heard some of this, but I think it bears repeating. in being Makariv people, many take the approach of being nice and inviting, come for Shabbos, and, you know, and there's a certain element of come, and like the kids crawl on top of you, and it's, you know, Gevaldik, and, you know, come, please come back, and, you know, no one's pushing anything. And I had the opportunity, privilege to visit with many people, including some that are very stark, who never said a word, Jeff, you should do this, Jeff, you should do that. It was just, you know, come. And this is sort of the standard, you know, way, and probably the most successful way for most people. It's not Kiwi's way. Kiwi pushed. He had a certain way of being able to push, and in a way that you felt good. You didn't feel bad. He was going to tell you what he thought you needed to hear. And in a way that with his certain smile and his certain, you know, attitude and his whole being, he had a certain way of pushing. So one quick aside, a cousin, Yitzchak Sperka, who I knew from school, got married. It was one of the first from weddings that I attended. And you know, the dancing now, it's normal to me. At the time, it wasn't. The men are over here, the women separately, and, like, dancing with all the men. It just, and so that was a little uncomfortable, and I certainly didn't want to go in the middle of the circle when the chassan was there. So I was a little thinner then than I am now, but I still had, I'm sure, at least 100 pounds on Kibian, and I'm in the circle. And I remember he, like, leaned his shoulder into me, and he pushed me out into the middle. So the pushing. And at first I was nervous, but it was good, and I was happy to, you know, dance or whatever for Yitzchak, and so that was kind of a literal pushing. And then figuratively, I used to come in for Shabbos all the time, and we're so happy to be living on this block now, after all the years and run into the decades. And he sat over there, the first chair on the other side, but somehow when we were learning, we sat at the second chair, him over there, me over here. And countless times we sat learning mostly Gemara, sometimes Halakha. And one specific thing I remember was I would say, well, maybe it's this, or, you know, offer some explanation. I mean, he was doing all the reading and all the translating, and I was trying to follow along and listening, and and I was always ready to offer, you know, an answer. Maybe it's this. And I remember how he would gracefully, you know, he did the opposite of, no, that's completely wrong. He didn't, you know, he had a certain way of saying, well, you know, could be, I don't know, it was very inclusive and very, it was all positive. And, you know, you saw the, you know, I just felt like he was saying to me constantly, sometimes he was saying it verbally, sometimes non-verbally, gotta learn, you gotta grow. And part of it, part of that was explicitly or implicitly through learning. And part of it also, he also always went out of his way to make me feel part of the family. And when you feel, when you're part of a family, there's another aspect of pushing, let's call it, where the family has an expectation, unspoken often, for members of the family. And many times, I'm sure we've all had experience when you have guests and things, sometimes you want to say something to your kids. And you're not going to, you know, kids don't climb on the whatever, or kids, you know, it's time to bench. But someone else, the guest's kids, you're not going to necessarily, you know, tell them. You're going to say to your kids, you don't want to mish or whatever. And so he made me feel part of that family, which then there was this often, you know, a constant kind of unspoken, I'll say, pressure. In a good way, to learn, grow. This is what's expected of you. You know, this is what's expected of a Jew. You're a Jew, so therefore, this is expected, you know, of you. All unspoken, and all powerful, and all good. A few times, I went to Eretz Yisrael to learn, later years, and I was in Or Sameach for about a month. A few times, every other year, I went for about a month. And at least one of the times I was there, Kivi was also learning in the Mir in Yerushalayim. And so we arranged to have a seder together for the time when I was there. It was beautiful. It was very nice. And there's another just little maisa, and I don't know what it means, but it was meaningful to me, and maybe it'll be meaningful here. One of the things that I liked to do, I don't do it so much anymore, was, well, I used to consider it a victory if I could stump one of you people for like 2 seconds with a question. I was like, ooh, that was, I feel like I have to do more than that. But sometimes, anyway, if I would think of an answer or a question, I would think of something. I used to like to go, hoo-hoo, Syosset High School. 1 point for Syosset High School. Which is where I went to high school. And so there I was learning with Kivi in the Mir. And the learning whatever, some, I don't remember what, which Gemara. And this happened where I thought of, you know, something. And I said, ooh, 1 point for Syosset High School. And Kivi said, no, 1 point for Samaya. Which was the Madrega. It was, I don't know, it was, again, that connection and warm, nice, and good. Another thing that happened was at some point, all these years I was living in Manhattan, basically, and usually I would come here for Shabbos, but on a few occasions, Kivi came to me for Shabbos, stay with me in my apartment, and we had a lot of people over, and I remember a number of occasions. I remember one meal in particular where there were a lot of people around the table, you know, firing away questions at Kivi. And one of the things that struck me was, quite a few times during the course of this meal, they were throwing the questions from left and right, and Kivi said, "Well, the Gemara says blah 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 blah," or, and then a few minutes later, the Gemara says blah blah blah, whatever it was. This was the chiddush. In my apartment, no one had ever answered a question like that. A related point, I remember when I got a set of shas that I had in that apartment, and I went to the YU Sfarim sale, and I bought the set of shas, a box of, you know, these big boxes with things like this one that I brought. And it made such a big impression. I felt like it totally transformed my apartment to have a set of shas. For a while, I was like intimidated to do this. I don't know what. But so after a while, I felt like it was fitting for me to have a set of shas, for this apartment that I was living in, to have a set of shas. And it was really transformational. So how much more so? So here's Kivi in my apartment. They're firing these questions, and he's, you know, saying the Gemara this and the Gemara that. Made a big impression. You know, like we take for granted having a set of Gemaras in the house, but it's not something to take for granted. It's a very chashuva thing. And when a person is answering questions, you know, from those Gemaras, it's a very chashuva thing, and it also made a big impression on me. So mainly it was... It was the learning over here, where so many times, countless times, I came for Shabbos, and we would learn Friday, maybe Shabbos afternoon, sometimes Motzei Shabbos, so it all added up, and it all made a big impression. And Baruch Hashem, my learning has continued over the years, driven, you know, mainly, I would say, or in large part, by all these experiences with Kivi. And I still feel his presence. I still feel him pushing me. So anyway, with that as an introduction, I'd like to learn the first Tosfos in the Sefer Pesachim. I brought copies, in case anyone would like to read along. I'll pass these out. Some over here. Everyone probably knows the Tosfos. The first Mishnah begins Orla Abasa Asar on the 14th of Nisan, the night of the 14th, one night before the Seder. Both can rest the chametz, l'or haneir. A person is obligated to search his rishos for chametz with the light of the candle. This is Rashi Bodkin, a famous Rashi. Why did the Chacham obligate us to make this search? Shelo yavor alav b'bayirah b'yamaseh. So that a person shouldn't be over b'yirah b'yamaseh, which we know are two lavin in the Torah, that a person shouldn't have chametz in his, that he shouldn't see chametz, and no chametz should be found in his house, and his rishos. Rashi says that b'yirah b'yamaseh. That's the reason why we have to do the search. So we have to make the bedika and then get rid of the chametz. So we shouldn't be over by the rabbi. Tosfos, we'll see in a second, asks the Baam Kasha on this rashi. Tosfos says, on the words, Or la'arba asar bodkin es ha'chametz. Begins by quoting Rashi, Teir Shekuntras. Shalo la'avor la'av b'bayi rabbi matze. Right away comes the Kasha. The Kasha l'ri. Ri asks, Kevan ditzarech bitul, since a person anyway has to do bitul, kid amar b'gemara, like we'll learn in Daf Vav,
Habodek tzarech shiyavatel. A person who does the bedika anyway has to do the bittul. Umidureisa bebittul ba'al masagi. And the bittul itself is sufficient to not go fayir al bayimate. So then, amai hetzrichu chachamim bedika klal. So why did the chachamim institute the bedika? And this is strong kasha and rashi. You have to do the bittul. The bittul knocks off by your rabbi yamate. So contrary to rashi, you know. So ask the rishi. So why do we have to do the bedika at all? And nira, and he says, I'll tell you two reasons. Reason number one: the afagav desari bebittul ba'alma. Even though bittul ba'alma is sufficient. Hachmiru tenaka by Rabbi Yamate. Hachmiru chachamim livdok chametz ulivaro. The chachamim were machmir to require that we search for the chametz and destroy it. Why? Shelo yavo l'achos, so that a person shouldn't come to eat it. B'chein mashma l'kaman. We'll see a gemara dafav. Debay Rava. Rava declares kikar b'shmei korah. There's a loaf sitting up on a beam, v'chulu, and odoma zimdin denafal v'asir l'michle. Sometimes it could happen that the loaf will fall down into the place where people might eat it, and a person might accidentally pick it up and eat it, even though the person did the bittul, and so al pidin the loaf like doesn't exist, or it's, you know, he's not over by Yerav, by Yematze, but still, Maisa, the roll is there, and the person might pick it up and eat it, and that's a separate Isser, which we know is very common. So this is the first reason of the Ri. That the Chama said, no, your person has to do Bittul, even though person has to do a Bedika, even though the Bittul will be sufficient, he has to do the Bedika so that this food that is Usser to him, he shouldn't come to eat it. So then a person might ask, well, there are lots of other isurim, lots of other foods that are usur in Torah, so why didn't the Chachamim asur require a bedika for those other things? Says Tosfos, v'hatam shachmiru kan tvei mi b'sha'ar isurei hana. The reason that the Chachamim were more machmir here with chametz than for other isurei hana is shelo hatzrichu, that the Chachamim were more machmir, shelo hatzrichu, Hutzrichu, Lebaram, that a person should is required to destroy the chametz. Mishum, the chametz mutter kol hashana, v'lo nesar rak b'pesach. V'lo b'dile mine. That chametz is only it's mutter the whole year. You have a nice pastrami sandwich the whole year, it's mutter, and all of a sudden on Pesach it's usur. And a person won't recoil from the nice pastrami sandwich. If there was a cheeseburger, a havdil, then you know, no one's going to be interested in that. They're going to pull back. They're not going to be interested. We know it's usur, you know, throughout the year. And says the Gemara, the Kaman, the lo dummy lebishar lebasar b'chalav v'orla uklay hakerem sheisurim nahay gisar olam. These things are always usur throughout the year. So therefore, a person is not going to be attracted to them. The chametz is different than any of the other foods that are usher to eat, because this isser only occurs at a certain time, the time at Pesach time. So that's why the chametz were more machmir. Alright, what about a nazir? The Tosfos is discussing another case. A nazir is not allowed to have wine, but we don't make him he's not allowed to drink the wine, but we don't make him destroy it, search for it, and get rid of it. Why not? This Tosfos is very encapsulated, very kind of crystallized, these few words. The nazir nami, also we don't make him get rid of it. Nami isure, the thing it's usur to him, we don't make him get rid of. Why? Shari lachmini, because it's permitted to other people. So, there's a lot to say about this. I think it's the rush that goes into more detail. But this is just another case that Tosfos brings, that there's something that's usur that the Torah does not make us get rid of. So that's all the first reason of the Ri. Inami, reason number two. I think this brings the Ri. Shani chametz. Chametz is different. Shachmiru bo Torah la avor bal yirah bal yematze. The Torah itself was machmir with chametz. because of the Yisurim of Bali Rav Bali Masi, which you don't find with any other item. Therefore, Hachmiru Chachamim Livto Ulevaro. Afilu Hecha de Bitlo. Afilu Hecha Lebitlo. Mishrom Doma Ase Lemichle. So it's slightly different reasoning, reaches the same result at the end. Slightly different reasoning. Because the Torah itself was Machmir with Chametz, therefore the Chachamim were also Machmir with Chametz and required this Bedika, so that a person shouldn't come to eat it. Because the Chachamim saw that the Torah was particularly Machmir with Chametz, and therefore the Chachamim also were Machmir with Chametz. Continues Tosfos. V'niro l'Rashba, the Afilu, the Fi Tam Ha'akron, even according to this latter reason of the Ri, that the Chachamim were Machmir on Bedika because the Torah was Machmir with Bali Rav Bali Matzeh, Tzarek Lomar, you have to say, the Hachmiru Chachamim Bekal Chametz, with all Chametz, Afilu B'Chametz Nuksha, the Ayyidei Karuva, certain kinds of Chametz, Afal Gav, even though the Lekha Bali Raya, according to Rabbeinu Tam, which we see on the beginning of El Ovrin and Dachman Beis, that Rabbeinu Tam holds that these kinds of things, Chametz Nuksha and Taruvos, Chametz Gamar Al Yidei Taruvos, are not sort of to Bali Rav Bali Matze. Nonetheless, the Bedika applies to all Chametz, even those things. Even those things where there's no Bayer al Bayer Matze, according to the Beinu Tam. Okay, how do we know this? Taha Amar, because it says, I didn't find the spot yet where it says this in the Gemara, but I imagine it's somewhere in that parak. Seir Yusarev, Seir's a certain kind of something that's Chametz Nuksha. Behind the Chametz Nuksha, oh yes, Kidmucha Chazam, like it's established over there. The Ikal Amanda Amar Nami Chazam, another Amanda Amar over there that says the Kol Shekein Chametz Gamar Al Yidei Teruvos, that these things are not included. That these things are included in the Bedika. The Bedika has to catch them also. Mashma the Asar. Oh yeah, because it says Seir Yusari, the Seir has to be burned. So it's mashma the asur la hashoso. It's asur to just sit and wait and hold on to the chametz over Pesach. Why? How do we know it's asur? The imutur la hashoso, because if it were mutter to just wait and hold on to it, amai yisarif. Why does the Gemara say it has to be burned? Yisha also ad achar Pesach. Hold on to it. Just wait until after Pesach. V'yehei mutter. And then it would be mutter, afilu le Rebbe Yehuda. The lo asur Rebbe Yehuda chametz achar Pesach, ella b'chametz gamar. And this, the chametz nuksha and the taruvos will be mutter, even according to Rebbe Yehuda, who's the one who asurs chametz after Pesach, because that is only chametz gamar. Why does he asur chametz gamar? Dika gimel krai, lesoch, there were three pesukim that talk about why the chametz is aser. Aval the nuksha, the leka, ella chad kra. But for chametz nuksha, there's only one pasuk that relates to chametz nuksha, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda asers chametz achar Pesach only for chametz gamar. But even he, you see, would agree that chametz nuksha and the taruvos would also have to be, it's usher to leave it over because of this thing seir yisarif. Oh, and then just the last line. Afilu Rabbi Yehuda Moda, that would be usher. So with that's the first Tosfos in Sekhs Sakhim, and this is, I'll say, 25 years in the making, and so, I feel Kiwi with me all the time, and I do something like this, I'm learning with my Chavrusa, I hear his voice, and I see his smile, and I see a certain, you know, a chin, and the way he sat, and the way he held himself, the way he danced at my chasana, at a lot of events I'm sure we've all attended. One thing I didn't see, but I heard about quite a bit, was the barbecues at 4 o'clock in the morning. And even those, another thing I wanted to say, you know, even though the barbecues in the country at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, it was very, he liked to do that, and it was fun, but it was always with them, like the donuts that are in the shul in the yeshiva Thursday night. You know, pushing, whether it's with donuts or with the barbecue, or again, just with that grin and chin and certain way of being. Anyway, so that's Tosfos. This is continuing. Evidence of Akiva Shammai's presence.